Our next case of the morning is number 06-2518, Tyrig against the Attorney General.
May it please the court, I'm Godfrey Mwange for Muhammad Bilal Tyrig. Our case presents kind of a convoluted picture, and I'll try to simplify it as much as I can. And before going into that, I'd like to apologize to the panel for kind of a mistake I made in attributing one of the opinions, which is a per curiam opinion, Shaikh Ahmed, in my zeal to prove that all good things come from Wisconsin. I attributed it to Judge Diane Sykes. I believe it was a per curiam opinion. All good things do come from Wisconsin, but that was a mistake on my part, and I apologize for doing that.
The other judges on that case were Rovner and Mannion. I'm sure they were not offended.
I'm glad to
they
hear
would not
that.
Have known that.
I'm glad to hear that, Judge Evans. It's reassuring. Mr. Tyrig arrived in the United States with his parents, who at the time were engaged in a domestic dispute and were in, you know, the process of dissolving their marriage, which once they landed did indeed dissolve, and they became divorced. Each one then married somebody else. At some point, Tyrig was living with his mother, had to drop out of high school so he could help his mother support his siblings, a brother and a sister. At another point after the September 11 terror attacks, certain nationals, male nationals of countries the U.S. considered terror supporters and sponsors, Tyrig had to register under the National Entry Exit Registration System, and that was his encounter with the former INS, and because he had an expired visitor visa, he was issued a notice to appear before the immigration judge in removal proceedings. He at that point appeared and advised the immigration judge that he would be seeking relief in the form of adjustment of status pursuant to labor certification, which he sought individually, and that he would be grandfathered under Section 245I through an adjustment application his mother was seeking, also through labor certification and perhaps through adjustment of status through marriage, which was a possibility at that point for his mother. Alternatively, Mr. Tyrig would be seeking asylum as relief from removal. The immigration judge gave Tyrig 60 days to file his asylum application, which would fall sometime in October of 2003. At the October hearing, things started to go awry for Tyrig. The immigration judge started to dispute, which he had kind of broached at the earlier hearing that year, started to dispute Tyrig's eligibility for grandfathering under Section 245I. Tyrig's immigration court counsel, Mr. Harold Block, explained to the immigration judge how grandfathering worked. The immigration judge was not totally convinced, but became convinced begrudgingly later. That led the immigration judge to move on to something else. The immigration judge then disputed whether Tyrig was actually eligible under grandfathering based upon the mere having a labor certification application filed. In the immigration judge's mind, he had to have a petition for immigrant worker as opposed to a labor certification application. And in the immigration judge's mind, he was equating what happens on the family side of qualifying for 245I, where an I-130, the immediate relative petition, is what vests 245I eligibility. So the immigration judge was arguing that an I-140, which is the employer's petition for an immigrant worker, is the equivalent of the I-130, which is error, because the INS had conceded that the alien labor certification application is what vests 245I eligibility, and the service has maintained that position to the present day. And so that is part of the confusion in this case. Nevertheless, proceedings went on, and having seen that that did not work, the immigration judge then picked up on what he called Tariq's delay of proceedings by filing what the IJ characterized as a tenuous asylum application. Now, the statute does not say anything about tenuous, nor does the regulations. The regulations specifically say frivolous, and those two words are distinguishable. Now, our brief distinguishes those two words by looking at Black's Law Dictionary and other dictionaries, and those two things are not the same. The IJ equated them, which we believe is error. Now, if the court has any questions, I'd like to address them, but other than that, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Mwangi. We'll hear now from Mr. Least.
May it please the court, I'm Jeff Least on behalf of the respondent. The petitioner originally came to the United States with his parents in 1996. He did not file for any kind of relief until he was put in proceedings in 2003. When he was put in proceedings, he did ask for a continuance because he had a pending labor certification. However, this court has found in two cases, there's Subhan as well as its progeny, that just the mere finding of the mere fact that he has put forth a labor certification, if the immigration judge wishes to deny a continuance on that basis, that is not a good enough reason. He must have some other reason besides that. In this case, the immigration judge did not rely solely on the fact that his labor cert was not yet current or that he did not have a visa. He made several other findings as to why he was going to deny the continuance.
What's the government's position on this court's jurisdiction to review a denial of continuance?
In this situation, it does have a jurisdiction pursuant to Subhan, where the relief he's seeking, if you deny the continuance, in effect, you're taking away his, or if you deny the jurisdiction, you're in effect taking away his ability to apply for this relief. There is jurisdiction to review that kind of situation.
Well, it's my understanding from a number of other cases over the course of the past 60 days or so that the government has revised its position on this issue and now takes the position that the jurisdiction stripping provision in the statute does not apply to discretionary denials of continuances because the authority over continuance denials is contained in the regulations, not the statute. Are you familiar with this change of position?
That is correct,
on the
yes.
Part of the Department of Justice, and that eliminates Subhan and Ben Slimane and the other cases that that assume that there is no jurisdiction, but nevertheless proceed to address the issue if for a determination of whether some reason other than the mere status of the labor certification was given by the agency. So that whole line of cases, if the government's new position is correct, is simply not valid anymore.
That is correct.
Okay.
But the immigration judge did give
so
several reasons.
So are we in an abuse of discretion land now?
Yes, that would be
land
correct.
Now?
Yes, we're
okay.
In abuse of discretion land.
Okay.
The immigration judge gave several reasons as to why he was denying the motion for a continuance. He gave one, which was the fact that he felt the asylum application was weak and tenuous, which is not the same thing as a frivolous finding. Finding a frivolousness can be a bar for relief. In this case, the immigration judge ultimately denied asylum because it was untimely, denied withholding and CAT based on a lack of a nexus between the persecution as well as the as well as a protected ground, and that there was no evidence that the Pakistani government was unwilling or unable to protect petitioner. There's several different instances which support the immigration judge's finding that this is a weak and tenuous case. For one, at the time of the hearing, the government counsel put forth evidence that the petitioner's father filed an asylum application, which was completely different as the basis of relief than what the petitioner himself was alleging. The immigration judge also found that there was no nexus between the alleged persecution as well as protected ground, that there was no evidence that the government was unwilling or unable to protect him, and there was no real evidence that this person, Mr. Mustafa, who was the basis for his claim, was A, still alive, B, still in Pakistan, or C, had any interest whatsoever in persecuting the petitioner. The immigration judge also found significant the fact that the petitioner waited until he was already in proceedings to apply for any kind of relief. The petitioner came in 1996 with his parents. In 1997, when he lost his status, he made no attempt to adjust his status in any way. When he turned 18 in 2001, he again made no attempt to adjust his status, even though his mother at that time was filing a labor cert of her own. And he spoke to his mother about his status, but still made no attempt to in any way normalize his status. It wasn't until 2003, when he was put in proceedings, that he made any kind of attempt to normalize his status. Therefore, it is our position that the immigration judge did not abuse his discretion, denying the continuance. Another issue that the petitioner raises in his brief is the immigration judge's untimeliness finding itself for asylum. Strangely, the petitioner does not argue that he was, in fact, eligible for withholding or CAT. He just focuses solely on the immigration judge's untimeliness finding. And substantial evidence also supports that. This court has held in, I believe it's Pavlik versus Gonzalez, that this court lacks jurisdiction to consider the untimeliness finding when it's related to extraordinary circumstances, which in this case it was. The petitioner additionally raises issues with the actual language itself, whether the immigration judge should have said extraordinary versus exceptional, and whether his definition of changed circumstances was the correct definition. It is our position that those arguments are largely without merit. The extraordinary circumstances which the petitioner alleges are that his family was going through some kind of strife, his parents got divorced in 1996 after he arrived here. This is now 2001 when he becomes 18. 2003 when he finally files the asylum application. He claims that he had to take care of his family, his siblings, while his mother was working. However, his mother was able to get her labor certification in 2001. He was able to talk to his mother about his immigration problems in 2001, but made no steps until 2003 to in any way adjust his status. And furthermore, because the immigration judge denied relief of withholding and CAT based on the fact that there was no nexus between the persecution and a protected ground, and because there was no evidence that the Pakistani government would not protect him, even if there was somehow abuse of discretion in finding that the application should have been timely, there still is evidence that even if it was a timely application, it still would have been denied based on the holdings regarding withholding and CAT. And the third issue which the petitioner raises on appeal is the fact that the board did not expressly address his motion to supplement evidence in its decision. We argue that this is an immaterial and harmless error. For one, the board doesn't, or in his brief to the board, the petitioner does actually raise his arguments relating to additional evidence. He does, in fact, put some of that evidence into his brief itself. And furthermore, the evidence which he does put forth is largely immaterial. He argues that the immigration judge erred because DHS presented the document that said Muhammad Tariq, who is also petitioner's father, that a man of that name and birth date went to Pakistan in 2000, got a new visa, and came back. That in no way impacts the fact that the immigration judge found no nexus for the persecution, or that the Pakistani government would not protect him, or it really does not affect the finding that there was no real evidence that he would be persecuted if he did return to Pakistan. Well, the petitioner also argues that the immigration judge erred in looking at his father's asylum application and presents a new affidavit, his father's third affidavit now, saying that his asylum application at the time was incomplete because he only had a couple hours to do it. Again, that does not impact the fact that the immigration judge found no nexus for the persecution, no evidence that the Pakistani government would basically concede to him being persecuted, or it does not even really affect the fact that there's no evidence that he would, in fact, be persecuted in Pakistan if he did return. If there are no questions, the respondent respectfully requests that this petition be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. List. Mr. McGwungi has how much time? 3 minutes. Thank you, sir.
Appellate review on the record is supposed to look at the record in its totality. If you take those issues as my opponent has taken them and split them up, of course, none of them by itself qualifies as a basis to reverse the decision below. If you take them together and look at what the IJ was doing and what the board did, there is something there. There's a rush to judgment. The IJ began this case prepared to review it. At some point, however, it's clear the IJ decided he needed to get rid of this case and started looking for reasons why or how to get rid of this case, and then latched onto 245I, went to the I-140, then the tenuous asylum application, and started looking for reasons why it was tenuous. He first jumped on the DHS's NICE printout, the non-immigrant information system, where he tried to argue your dad has no fear in Pakistan because he returned there without harm. Well, it turns out if you Google Muhammad Tariq in the United States, there's 257 of them. In Milwaukee alone, there are two of them with the same date of birth. And this dad of this guy was picked up by INS in Milwaukee once before. And so, yes, if you look at one of these things individually, they don't amount to much. But if you look at the cumulative effect, and the IJ is not reviewing these things each in a vacuum. He's reviewing them together, and he's forming an opinion as to the worth of this case. And that is what appellate review is about. And if the court looks at this and asks, what's going on here? The IJ is clearly trying to get rid of this case. And that is the reason why, in fairness, this case ought to be remanded. And this young man, yes, he turned 18. But on the day you turn 18, and most of us here have turned 18, you don't suddenly know you need to apply for asylum. And if your parents have been fighting and your dad has told your mom, I'll kill you, you don't suddenly know everything there is that you need to know about where to go to file for asylum. Your mom may be applying for labor certification, but you won't know that you need an application of your own. The very fact that his mom was applying for labor certification might have prevented him from doing something, because mom's going to get something. Maybe by virtue of that, I get something too. So it is illogical to expect this young kid to have acted when the government said he should have acted. It is not humane to think that way.
Thank you, Mr. Mawogi.
Thank you.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.